Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest was last on the show in November to discuss his documentary, The Problem with Apu. In that film, as many of you know, the filmmaker, comedian Hari Kondabolu, talks about growing up the son of Indian immigrants in the United States and seeing so few Indian people in the media. After the documentary came out, there was a vague response within a Simpsons episode, Apu being that Simpsons character who owns the convenience store. And Hank Azaria, the voice of Apu, spoke about the issue on The Late Show. If we have time, we're going to play a clip from that. And since then, Hari has also released a new stand-up special called Warn Your Relatives, which blends personal and political humor and offers a comedic take on serious issues like terrorism, mass shootings, identity politics, religion, and healthcare, all those funny things. You might have also heard Hari on WNYC last week, hosting Midday for a few days. So, Hari, I guess welcome back to the guest seat on
WNYC. I'm practically living here, Brian.
And Warn Your Relatives. Let's start right there. Sure. Whose relatives and about what?
I mean, Warn Your Relatives is a reference to one of the last, actually the last joke on the special. And I say warn you, I like it as a title, first of all, because it's kind of harsh, but it's a little mysterious. I just remember after the Trump election, I would hear a lot of my friends and people in the media saying, we need to talk to our families. We need to talk to our generally white families over Thanksgiving, and we have to make sure we have those difficult conversations, and we have to call them out when they say something racist. And all of that seems really, you know, well-intentioned and I think is necessary. But at the end of the day, I was thinking about it. That's not going to change the world alone. And change is going to happen whether or not you talk to your relatives or not. You know, no, we're not waiting for change, right? You know, when we hear about children being taken from their parents and we hear about what we're doing internationally and just the kind of conditions many different people in this country are facing right now as a result of these recent policies, people aren't waiting. We're not going to wait. Just like when people were being detained in airports, you know, because they were Muslim or Arab or from Muslim or Arab countries, like people didn't wait. They rushed to the airport, right, mm-hmm. without even being told to. So warn your relatives. Things are going to change whether or not you say something or not, and they better be ready.
And you say in the special that your comedy isn't for everybody, and that's true to an extent for every comedian.
Sure.
But what do you mean by it in your case?
I mean, I don't think I talk a lot about my politics. My point of view is embedded in, you know, it's weird to say my politics because that's just me saying talking about what I care about. And that's what every comedian does. I don't think that's necessarily different. So I don't see any difference between the political and the personal. They're the same thing. But I realize for some people that already takes them out of the game. And what I'm looking for are people that are willing to pay attention. And even if they don't like what I'm saying, want to see where I'm going. Like, you know, he's a good comic. I don't agree with everything, but he's a good comedian. And that's, you know, what you hope for. But I also know, like, some people don't want that. And some people don't also like the way I tell jokes. I mean, I have long setups. I tell stories. You know, I don't believe in the idea that, like, if you explain the joke's dead. I think there's a joke in explaining the joke. I think when people don't know information, there are jokes along the way to explain what you're trying to say. Especially, I think, as a comedian of color, I think often a lot of us who are in marginalized groups lose jokes because we're trying to appeal to a mainstream white audience who maybe doesn't have the same experience. So when you're trying to say something that relates to everyone, the whole idea, it's funny because it's true. Well, it's true because you understand it. And I don't like the idea that because you don't understand something, the joke isn't for you. I'll make you understand it and laugh while you're understanding it, and then I'll hit you with the other punchline.
Here's 30 seconds from Warn Your Relatives, and I don't know if this exactly exemplifies what you were just saying or not, but let's listen on the topic of hate crimes and racism as the original terrorism.
Hate crimes and racial violence are like the original terrorism in this country, but there's such a high bar to prove something is a hate crime here, right? It's like, does it say racial slur? Can you prove intent? Was there a video recording? Was there a white witness? You know, an eye whiteness? Was whiteness present at the time? Terrorism, on the other hand, has a very low bar. It's just like, explosion, there's a falafel place, terrorism. That's all it is.
Huh. That joke probably doesn't need to be explained.
No, I mean, I will say the thing I discovered with that joke is early on when I say that hate crimes and racial violence are the original kind of terrorism, I immediately have to shift to rest the joke, because if I pause on that, people will start clapping or being really confused.
Huh.
So it's best to say that and let it sink in later and let the joke take over. But those, that one I find interesting, because I had to learn that just from, oh, people are clapping now, they're not going to listen to the rest of the joke. I mean, I don't need the choir to step in.
Right.
I want you to listen to the joke.
You want to hear, get the punchline out.
Yeah.
You know, you said something a minute ago that made me think of one of the clips that I pulled to possibly play with you today. When you said, you know, you're talking to people who, even if they don't agree with you and don't understand anything, are interested in hearing what you had to say. And it
yes.
made me think of a story that you told on the podcast that you do with your brother, Ashok, which I also have really enjoyed when I heard it. And I want to play for our listeners a short clip from your last episode of the season last month, when you were telling a story about doing a show in Ann Arbor and you were heckled by a Trump supporter. So we're going to play 40 seconds of this. Here we go.
I'm in the middle of a show, doing really well. It's going great. I make some joke about the Trump administration. Nothing too heavy because, you know, it's sad. There's nothing much to say. And... but I do the thing. I'm on to the next joke. I'm making a joke about the whole Starbucks thing that happened a couple of weeks ago. And all of a sudden...
So Starbucks is racist. That's a thing. You guys remember that story from a few weeks ago?
Hail Trump!
What'd you say?
Hail Trump!
Hail Trump?
Initially, I'm like, is this guy joking? But apparently he was wearing a business suit, shortcut. Like, he was wearing the whole new Nazi outfit that they wear.
So someone comes to your comedy show and shouts, Hail Trump.
Yeah.
Do you think he came there explicitly to heckle the Indian guy, or do you have any idea?
I mean, I have a feeling he didn't know what he was walking into. And if he did come to heckle the Indian guy, I'm glad I got his money. He does not get a refund. But, you know, it made for a potentially really tense moment. Like, that moment was tense, I think, just because he didn't say, go Trump, or he didn't say, make America great again, which already has become this loaded thing. He said, hail Trump.
Yeah. And I think my first response might have been to say, you mean Heil Trump.
Right. I mean, I think that's what he did mean. I think that's our version of it, but I think that's really what it feels like. Because the room got tight. The room didn't boo. The room got tight.
Yes.
It wasn't a group. It was one person.
Yes.
To get a room that tight after one person says one thing, I mean, that's loaded with a whole bunch of other meanings. So, you know, after that, you know, I put the clip online, actually, me going after this guy in Ann Arbor. But I nailed him, you know, which I don't like making people feel bad, but he deserved it. And I kind of nailed him for the fact that, like, you know, he's outnumbered and this is ridiculous. And it's a shame that we live in a place where free speech is being deterred in this way, because I wasn't doing anything that, you know, this is what free speech is. You know, and people could say, well, he has the free speech to interrupt. He does, but, like, what is the point of interrupting this kind of private thing? We're not talking about a public official. What it was is a public interruption. As much as The Simpsons bothered me, I wasn't talking about canceling the show. I think for free speech to truly be free, you need to have that and then challenge it after with other free speech.
So just from a sort of comedian's professional technique standpoint, I mean, any heckling must be bad enough.
Yes.
But when a heckle is basically a Nazi slogan, Nazi slogan adapted for today.
Hate speech is not my favorite type of heckle, Brian.
how do you hold it together and then get back to being funny?
You remember, I mean, I think a few years ago I would have gotten angry or upset, or there would have been a whole bunch of different things. Now I've gotten to the point where I'm like, this is America. Why am I shocked about this? You know, what I'm seeing on the news is far worse than that. This guy was civil enough to wait till I paused. He didn't interrupt the joke. He waited till I stopped talking and found the right moment. So good on you, sir. That's the best kind of heckle. It gives me the chance to reply and for everyone to hear it. You can't, I mean, look, unless there's a real provocation of violence, unless you really see someone, you know, which I've had those incidents, I've had threats and I've had people being taken out, not taken out by violence, but taken physically removed from the space Those are the worst ones. This wasn't that. This was some jerk who tried to instill fear in a room with that phrase, and ultimately he lost.
In Warn Your Relatives, the new Netflix special, you make a joke about the many different white supremacist groups and how they want the differences between them to be recognized, while at the same time they'll consider you the same as any other Indian or even South Asian person. Here's 36 seconds of Hari on that.
It's happening in this country right now, man. People are shooting everything up. Nazis walking around. Oh, that's another thing I got fact-checked for. Somebody comes up to me, he's like, well, here's the thing, Hari. All these racists aren't Nazis, right? Some of them are Nazis, but you also have Aryan Nation, KKK, Proud Boys, Vanguard. Look, are you kidding me? They think we're all the same. You think I give a what they call themselves? I'm sorry, Nazi. Did I insult your identity?
I believe I called him a snowflake after that point. So, yeah.
Why are... And that, is that a manifestation of privilege that you've observed that even white supremacist groups among white people might be defined in almost more diverse terms than groups of people of color?
I never thought about it as pure privilege, but I guess there is that degree. Like, okay, yeah, you're a separate group, even though you haven't, I guess you don't get a 501c3 if you're a hate group. I suppose it doesn't work that way. But like, yeah, I mean, it is kind of strange that this is a specific group, but we're willing to, we won't respect the other divisions. If we have a tough time in this country talking about transgender people, and we freak out about bathrooms and things like that, but a white supremacist group making a clear statement, oh, you're the different ones. This is a different group.
And reminds me of another joke that we didn't pull, but about the pattern of labeling white terrorists as mentally ill.
Yes, which, you know, and the point I make in that joke is just you know, yes, right. You know, white shooters are mentally, as opposed to suicide bombers who completely have it together, right? Those are people that have seen therapists for years. You know, it's not like someone who's willing to blow themselves up or commit these acts is completely there. There is something that's driven them to this point in the same way that there was something off with someone who decides to shoot up a school. But we don't think about that as mental health either, as some larger systemic problem. There's a privilege in that.
I mentioned that the last time you were on the show, it was to talk about your movie, The Trouble with Apu. Mm-hmm. And part of what made that movie so interesting, and I'm sure so frustrating for you as an experience in making it, was that you had the hardest time getting a response from people on The Simpsons, no less the actor who actually did the voice of Apu, Hank Azaria. So he has since come out, as you know, and we're going to play for our listeners about a minute of Hank Azaria on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert in April.
This new Clara sounds like she starts out pretty perfect.
You betcha.
But since she's already evolved, she doesn't really have an emotional journey to complete.
Nope.
Jump in here and apologize. That was not the clip I thought it was going to be. So now we're going to cue up Hank Azaria. That was my fault. I told the control room the wrong clip number. Now you know what happens behind the scenes. And here is Hank Azaria on The Late Show.
I've given this a lot of thought, really a lot of thought. And as I say, my eyes have been opened. And I think the most important thing is we have to listen to South Asian people, Indian people in this country, when they talk about what they feel and how they think about this character and what their American experience of it has been. And as you know, in television terms, listening to voices means inclusion in the writer's room. I really want to see Indian, South Asian writers in the room, not in a token way, but genuinely informing whatever new direction this character may take, including how it is voiced or not voiced. You know, I'm perfectly willing and happy to step aside or help transition it into something new. I really hope that's what The Simpsons does. And it not only makes sense, but it just feels like the right thing to do to me.
So did you find that satisfying,
absolutely,
appropriate?
I think I think what anybody wants, the idea that like we respect your experience, where, you know, you have a unique experience, your feelings are valid. Who doesn't want that? I feel like that was the basic sense of decency I think we all wanted. To me, that was like a big deal. And it also, you know, reminds me that Hank isn't ultimately in charge of the character, because he also talks, you know, I think Stephen asked, how did you feel about the Simpsons response, which was kind of a mocking response where Lisa talks about political correctness and things that were once lauded are no longer seen as, respectable because things are politically correct. And he said that he didn't know that was going to be the response. He said that was after the script was written and after he did his lines, that was added after. And ultimately, I think it was the job of the producers. I think guys like Al Jean and other people that work behind the scenes of The Simpsons, I think they slipped that in. I think that's a sign of their ego being damaged. I think it's a bit of white fragility. I think it's unfortunate that a show that was once so cutting edge became a bit institutionalized. They became an institution that is troubling.
And that's the clip that we accidentally started to play before. So here's those 30 seconds from The Simpsons now.
This new Clara sounds like she starts out pretty perfect.
You betcha.
But since she's already evolved, she doesn't really have an emotional journey to complete.
Nope.
Kind of means there's no point to the book.
Well, what am I supposed to do?
It's hard to say. Something that started decades ago and was applauded and inoffensive is now politically incorrect. What can you do?
Some things will be dealt with at a later date.
If at all.
You know what was so strange to me about that clip was that they kind of put the excuse making for it in the voice of Lisa Simpson.
The original Killjoy?
Not just the original Killjoy.
And social justice warrior.
Yeah, she's the social justice warrior, but she was dismissing it like, oh, well, things that used to be okay now aren't okay anymore.
That's somebody
which
putting...
Which didn't even seem consistent with her character.
Absolutely. That's someone putting... I mean, obviously, someone's always putting words in Lisa's mouth, but that in particular I thought was extremely strange because Lisa would take my side. And Homer would argue the other side not knowing what he was arguing about because he read something about political correctness. And Lisa gets frustrated with Homer constantly getting it wrong. That's the scene. And it felt like the show put themselves and their ego over the show, over the actual characters. And that, as a Simpsons fan, that bummed me out.
We just have about 20 or 30 seconds left, so let me invite you to give yourself a plug here and talk about the new Netflix special, Warn Your Relatives, and I guess how people can see it is just they have to be Netflix subscribers.
It has to be Netflix, right? and listen to it 180 countries. Share it with people. I'm proud of it. I think it's a unique thing. The Kundabola Brothers podcast, available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts. So, yeah, those are the two things. But I'm proud of this Netflix special a ton.
Hari Kundabola, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Brian.